and back.
We're here.
I wish I could give this feeling. I wish I could give this feeling.
What up, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Corner Podcast. This week's episode of the Corner is brought to you by Casper Mattresses. Casper is an online retailer of premium mattresses for a fraction of the cost. You know, me and Andreas are always covering events, we're always writing articles, but when we do have time to sleep, we lay our head down on a nice, pillowy, soft, premium mattress from Casper Mattresses. Casper is revolutionizing the mattress industry by cutting the cost of dealing with resellers and going straight to you. No showrooms, no middleman. Everyone's seen those creepy guys trying to follow you around the department store. None of that anymore. You get your hands on a nice premium mattress by going straight to Casper Mattresses.
Yeah, man. I mean, I got to get my rest. So Casper Mattresses is the goods. I'm telling you right now. So listen, you can get $50 off of any mattress purchase by visiting Casper.com/the corner and entering the promo code the corner. That's one word, the corner. That's Casper.com/the corner, promo code THECORNER. Terms and conditions apply.
What up, everybody? Welcome back to the Corner Podcast. It's been forever. By now, you already know it's Kel Dansby with Andreas Hale. Possibly the two busiest men you guys know, but we always got time for you. Rolling out the podcast again, it's been a crazy couple of weeks. Everyone's hitting us up on social media, like what happened, where have you guys been? We'll talk about all that. Trust me, we're here for you. McGregor Mayweather's picking up. We ain't gonna leave you guys stranded. We didn't go anywhere. We're still here bringing you guys the fire. And now every week, we kind of got stuff worked out. We got a good time worked out. We're actually gonna be on schedule. It's been a while. So, Dre, let's start off with you. You took the world tour.
Yeah, man. I mean, I took a little vacation. Champions is no longer around. So, you know, the wife and I, we took the fam. We went to D.C. Covered Comic-Con a few weeks ago. Took my nephew to his first Comic-Con, which was pretty amazing experience to watch him being something that I wanted to go. When I was a kid, I always wanted to go to stuff like that. So I got the opportunity to take him and, you know, he met like Willie Mack when I interviewed him for Lucha Underground. So he had a good time, man. So it's been a lot of traveling, but I'm back, you know, and it's back to business, man.
You were working while out there?
Comic-Con, yes. D.C., no. D.C., I went to the African-American Museum twice because it's amazing. and it's literally one of those things like you go and you can't get through it on your first try. Like you have to come back a second day. And if you can get in, because it's like it's so in demand, but D.C., no, it was not really a lot of work in there. I mean, I did a little bit of stuff here and there. I covered 214 from home for Yahoo. But for the most part, man, it was just like I was traveling and, you know, trying to enjoy life, man.
Nothing wrong with that. Nothing wrong with that. I haven't been to D.C. in forever. But I did just watch Birth of a Nation. So that shit was as good as you said it was. I'm glad, like, now it's past, like, the whole, you know, scandal around Homeboy who made it and all that. I just sat down. I watched it for what it was. That shit was incredible.
Yeah, I thought it was great. A lot of people said it was subpar, but...
Really? Yeah. It was shortened. Like, the end was rushed a bit, but it didn't bother me.
Yeah, I mean, I thought the story needed to be told. You know, some people didn't like how it was directed or that. Acting or what have you. I thought it was a good movie. So,
So that was dope. What else have I done my 2 weeks away? I went to UFC 214 in LA. So I was in the building. That was a cool trip. Always like going to LA. It was fun. Came back, you know, just did summer league. Did a ton of stuff. I'm doing high school football coverage for my local station, the job I got over here. So I've been swamped, too. It's been hard for us to kind of get our schedules together. And the people, listen, man, y'all got to understand. We here for y'all. Hit us up on Twitter if you got to know what's up. We still here. We'll still talk on Twitter and all that. But had to take a quick little woosah break. Andreas hasn't been, what, this is probably the least you've had to work in a decade, I'm assuming.
I mean, yeah, I mean, always look, even when I am working, I always have stretches where I take a vacation, because I learned that several years ago. My wife was like, look, you can't keep working. You have to decompress and take a vacation. So usually I take a cruise or I go out of the country or something like that. But, you know, this was something we had already decided we were going to do. Comic-Con was, you know, more of a work trip, but, you know, spend time with my pops. But yeah, man, it's like, you got to unplug and you got to refresh and get back into the mix. But you got to have a recharged battery. I learned that you drain yourself really quick when you work too much. So the DC trip was good. You know, Comic-Con was, I mean, regardless of working at Comic-Con, Comic-Con was fun. You know what I'm saying? Like, you get to see like all these movies and comic books and meeting a bunch of people and interviewing people and favorite, you know, all your favorite comic books. And then, you know, I bought my nephew a bunch of stuff and that was just great. But yeah, man, it's like now you get back and you get right back to it, right back into the mix, because we got a big ass fight coming up in 2 weeks.
Before we even touch on that, how the hell you skip over the part of being backstage with Kendrick?
Oh, I know,
look it. You just try to play it cool, like, oh man, that was just like a regular Saturday. You backstage, I mean, chopping it up with Kung Fu Kenny, you just skip right over it.
I mean, look, that's people will be like, oh, well, you know, blah, you didn't do an interview. No, I didn't. Like, people that have listened to the podcast, people have known me that I've known Kendrick since I worked at BET way before Kendrick blew up. And I told a little story about it on my Facebook page, which I rarely use. But, you know, it was one of them days that they were in town. I talked to Top Dog, which I found out over the years that nobody really talks to Top Dog. So when I say that, people are like, you actually talk to him? I'm like, yeah, he's a big boxing fan. and that's how, I mean, to make the story a long story short, we met in 2008 when he brought J-Rock to my office and we were talking about West Coast hip hop. I like J-Rock's music. He played Kendrick stuff for me when he was just K-Dot. I told him, yo, this kid's amazing, but he's never going to make it because he's too dope. And I laughed. And I was like, anything that I like doesn't make it. This is 2008. This is like right before the blog started exploding. I had a towel of, I think it was Mayweather Hatton. I had like a promo towel. He's like, you like boxing? I was like, yeah, I cover it. And we've always been like, we always talk boxing. Like, we were talking about the Lomachenko fight. Like, I was watching it on my phone at the Kendrick show and we were talking about. So, yeah, after the show, went back there. Shout out to that whole team, Rhett One, Dave Free, who wasn't there that week. And obviously Top Dog. And then, you know, Kendrick came back. And I don't get to talk to Kendrick as much as I used to because he's just super busy. But interestingly enough, Dana White was at the show, which was.
That's crazy. Dana's everywhere, though. Everywhere.
Dana's in the front row. So Top Dog comes down and, you know, we're chopping up. Jermaine Dupri was at the show. I think I saw Ebro at the show. It was a lot of people at this show, the Vegas stop. But Top Dog comes down and we're talking and he's like, yo, Dana's here. Let's go say what's up. I'm like, okay. So we walk through the backstage. This is in the middle of Kendrick's performance. Kendrick's performing in Mad City. So we walk backstage and we walk like all the way around and we walk to the pit. And Top Dog slaps up Dana White. Dana was like, what's up, bro? And I'm like, this is so weird. Like, yo, this is so weird watching Dana and Top Dog have a conversation. So after the show, Dana and his kids were backstage. I was back there. And Kendrick comes back there. The last time I saw Kendrick was probably when I produced the Reebok commercial for his sneakers. And I hadn't seen him since then. And I figured he was tired. He was with his fiance. And, you know, he daps up Dana, he rolls up, and he's like, yo, and he gives me one of those long hug daps. And Dana looks, and Dana recognizes now that I'm in the room. Like, I think he only knows me from covering MMA. But he looks at me like, why are you in here? And, you know, he's like, what are you doing here? Don't you cover fights? Like, shouldn't you be covering UFC Mexico City? And like, nah. And me and Kendrick, like, having a conversation just about music. And, like, we talked about just a bunch of stuff. And, I mean, those folks, I mean, they'll always be cool with me, and they've always taken care of me. So I mean, that was an interesting part of the weekend, man. It's great to see how far he's come as an artist, because I always wondered, like, you know, I have friends in this industry, very few of them. I don't have a lot of friends, and I wouldn't even necessarily Kendrick as a friend. I would say that Kendrick's somebody that I've known. Top Dog is more of a friend, and we have a pretty good friendship because we talk pretty often. Kendrick is when it comes around. So to see that they've always, you know, acknowledged me and taken care of me, and, you know, Kendrick was like, I mean, the joint where I wrote about, you know, if Kendrick was dead, he'd be one of the GOATs. He was like, yo, that shit? He was like, I'm glad you said that. He was like, that was really strong. And those are the moments that make what you're doing feel like it's worth it. You know what I'm saying? But the concert was dope. It's amazing seeing like 10,000 white kids jump up and down to Mad City. But that's just part of the weekend, man. It's part of the course of what I do. And I usually don't talk about it publicly a lot, but you know, it's not, I don't think there's that many people that listen to this podcast that really give a shit. So we'll talk about it here.
I'm pretty sure all those white kids knew every word to King Kunta.
They did. He performed King Kunta, and it was like they went nuts. That, and they basically did Be Humble with no music. They just did it a cappella, which was kind of crazy to see. And the funny thing was, in this particular show, Kendrick goes, I remember the first time I was here, I performed in front of 50 people. My site, The Well Verse, was a co-sponsor for that show. And that was one of the first times where I actually formally interviewed Kendrick, because he wasn't on when I knew him before. So I went backstage, and he was like, you remember that show? He was like, do you have footage of that show? And we just started talking about the show. And people were like, he was here? Dog, he was here. There was like 50 people in the crowd. He performed in some spot called the Forbes. And there was like, he wore colorful socks, stood up on a stool because the stage wasn't big enough, and he's way too short. And he performed shit off of Section 80. But he remembers, to have a memory that deep where you remember shit. Most artists don't do that. They don't talk about the first time they were here and actually remember it. He remembered. And he remembered details. He was like, we was in the back room. There was like mad people around asking me questions while you're trying to do the interview. I was like, yep. He remembers this shit. It's crazy.
So after you completely downplayed that, which is still super dope, and people are going to be like, oh yeah, look it. Old man Andreas, just like ho-hum. I'm pretty sure you probably ate brunch, and you would have mentioned that before the Kendrick concert.
Did I eat brunch?
Went to D.C. and no brunch?
Oh, I went to D.C. and had brunch. We had brunch on a cruise, so that was dope. But
you went on a cruise in D.C.?
Yeah, I mean, it's like a brunch cruise. It was like one of the last days we were there before we got on our flight back. Family just took a brunch cruise, which was decent. It was decent. It's crazy. I didn't have like the best brunch in D.C. I had Ben's Chili Bowl, which I haven't had since the last time when I was out there when I did a speaking engagement when Obama was running for president. But Ben's Chili Bowl is amazing. I ate good food. Like we ate pretty good food. But I didn't have it like the amazing brunch that people know me for now. So I have no recommendations.
You have brunch on a boat. Like you're taking brunch levels to just new heights. Like, yo, you know what? I'm not even being stationary during brunch. Like if it don't move, I'm not on it.
You know, it was a good little brunch. But like I said, it wasn't nothing. My favorite brunch is still going to be Wilson's Creek Winery in Temecula. That's probably still my favorite brunch. And I didn't even have it when I went to San Diego. I missed out on it this time because I was too busy with Comic-Con. But, yeah, man, I still do brunch, man. It's grown man stuff. I see you're doing brunch now as well. You finally adopted the strategy of being a grown man.
Yeah. You know, I'm 29 now, man. I can do brunch and be comfortable with it. That's that wisdom that comes at 29 years old.
Yeah.
Listen, when I'm 30, you never know. I might take a cruise when I'm 30. I can't swim and it scares the hell out of me, but I might go on a cruise.
You should. It's worth your time.
Enlighten myself a little bit. What else have we missed, man? I feel like we've been gone forever. I mean, the time we had a podcast, I swear to God, Rihanna was still skinny. Like, there is now super thick and super thick Rihanna and super thick Beyonce.
Yeah, but Beyonce's had 3 kids.
Bless their hearts too, because she is woo. You know, I was never a huge fan of Beehive, but Beyonce, she can have all of it right now. Praise be, because yo, she was in the little roller skating rink, and I was like, damn, she's super like Instagram model thick now. Don't even lose the baby weight. Like, don't do it.
Yeah, that's the crazy thing about Beyonce, too. And I know people are like, why are y'all talking about Beyonce? But Beyonce was, at one point, she was thick when she was younger. And then it seems like when she ascended to stardom, she started getting skinnier to kind of, like, fit the mold of, like, a pop star. Well, now, you know, you're in your mid-30s. What's the point? Be thick.
Yeah.
I don't, you know, people appreciate that. You know, you don't have to appease these people that want you to be rail thin anymore. Just be out there and, you know, that's the yam. Same with Rihanna. Rihanna just, she don't care anyway, but.
Thick, yeah. Rihanna at the carnival looking celebration. The joint in Toronto or whatever. Oh, wow. That's crazy. Bad. Nah, we need to get an invite to OVO Fest. I need to get an invite to OVO Fest. I'm sure you always got an open invite if you ever wanted to just pop up in Toronto.
It'd be nice to
go and see the festivities. Drake had a dope show, it looked like. Again, another year running. His set looked crazy. And then, you know, thick Rihanna. I can't knock it.
Yeah, Cardi it doesn't B seem like Toronto's having a hard time.
Cardi B came out rocking. BX stand up. We made it.
Nicki had to be a little salty about that. I'm curious.
Yeah. She ain't hot no more. She ain't the hottest.
Yo, she's had, like, quiet as kept. She's had a very pretty, well, not very. She's had a pretty quiet and relatively stale 2017.
Yeah, I mean, she, what? The biggest thing that came out about Nicki Minaj is her getting dissed. If it wasn't for Remy, she'd be irrelevant, completely irrelevant.
Yeah, so, you know, we'll see who takes the throne in this the battle of these dope women MCs. My money's still on Rhapsody, but we'll see what happens.
People you like don't blow up.
That's what I always say, man. I say people that I like don't blow up. But, you know, every once in a while I hit a home run. So we'll see what happens.
Outside of that, like you said, big fight coming up. Mayweather versus McGregor. Boxing match. Man, has your mind changed? You've had 2 weeks to go on vacation, to get away. Are you finally ready to come back and say, you know what? Conor has a shot.
Hell no. Conor has...
Ain't shit changed.
Like... No, nothing's changed. Conor has absolutely no shot at winning this fight. I don't care what happens, the media tour, everything that's gone on. Nothing is going to convince me. And actually, to be honest with you, the whole Pauly Malignaggi situation has made it worse.
Do you think he really knocked down Pauly, or was it a slip?
I think it was a slip. I don't think, with headgear on, I don't see Conor McGregor knocking down Pauly Malignaggi. I just don't see it.
The same. Pauly's face looked beat up, but he kind of bruises like a peach. And right. Arlovsky's face, though, in the background of that picture, is the only thing that gave me doubt.
Yeah,
that's a genuine reaction. Arlovsky looked like, oh, shit. Like, it might have been the first punch Conor landed, and it may have put Paulie on his ass. Maybe that was the shock. Like, yo, he finally landed.
It could be it. I mean, the way, obviously, we have to talk about it. For the last week, Paulie got aired out, basically kind of tried to air out Pauly on some, you know, I knocked you down, and tried to embarrass him as a sparring partner. And then Pauly goes on the MMA Hour and completely trashes McGregor's camp, calling him a dirtbag, and goes into great detail on what happened. I think the first thing for me to take away from it is, if all of this is true, and I have sources that say that can corroborate, and I can't reveal them, but that at least 75% of what Pauly said is true. The sparring for 12 rounds is absolutely true. What is Conor out here thinking? Because that's not going to help you fight Floyd Mayweather. Sparring with Paul Malignaggi, who's retired, who's basically coming off of his couch to spar with you, and you take him 12 rounds to try to make an example out of him, that's not helping you in a fight with Floyd Mayweather. I can't understand the logic in that. Like, why are you doing this?
Muscle memory, because, right? You just get in shape. You want to push your body against someone who has pushed their body 12 rounds. Worst comes to worst, you just know that guy's done it before, regardless of what level he's at now.
But the problem is anybody, and I'm sure you've at least been to a couple of sparring sessions. I've been to multiple sparring sessions as long as I've covered boxing. Nobody spars the same opponent for 12 rounds. You always have a fresh body every 3 to 4 rounds.
Correct.
Because when you're in round 9 and somebody fresh is sparring with you, that pushes you a lot harder than having somebody who's just as gassed as you are. So it makes absolutely no sense to have Paulie in there unless you're trying to make a point. But what is the point that you're making if you're not, if the film isn't coming out before the Mayweather fight? If nothing is coming out before the fight, what is the point you're trying to make? And I think Dave Chappelle said it best, that Floyd is training while Conor is learning. Conor's still trying to learn how to box.
Yeah.
And for you to sit out here and try to make an example out of Paulie, who, again, 36 years old, past his prime, he's been through a lot, But more importantly, is coming off the couch as a Showtime analyst and thrown right into the fire to spar 8 or 12 rounds, you're not gaining anything there. You know, and Paulie's never fought like Floyd. The only thing, like Floyd hits harder than Paulie.
Yeah.
So it's like, come on. Like, Paulie has 7 knockouts in his career.
Yeah. I don't know. Like, the Paulie thing, once again, if you're just competitive, the history they have, the shit they've talked to each other, you can kind of dap it up and be like, yo, come into my camp. But you don't forget that when you get the chance to hit someone in the face. Even Paulie said there was shit talking going back and forth as soon as they started boxing. 4 rounds could have turned into 8, could have turned into 12 quick if you're running off at the mouth. So who knows if someone else was supposed to jump in. And Conor's just like, no, keep his ass in here. And we're just going to run it.
That's worse. You got an abbreviated camp, essentially an abbreviated camp to learn how to box. Why waste your time fighting Paulie Malignaggi? Like, not only is it bad because it doesn't really give you a sense of what it's going to be like to fight Floyd Mayweather, but you can hurt yourself by exerting yourself against one opponent trying to prove something. Like, there's so many things that are wrong. And again, Paulie doesn't fight like Floyd. You know, and I know that he said they got guys to emulate the shoulder roll. Look, you can go get Andre Berto to emulate the shoulder roll. The shit don't look right, and it don't work. Whatever Conor is doing. And he's got inexperienced people as well. It's not like he's got a true boxing line. It's not like he called.
That's Conor, though, right? Like, that's always been Conor.
That's why you're going to lose terribly.
And that's why he lost terribly. What, his first couple MMA fights gets choked out. And he's like, yo, we never did any groundwork. It took his camp time to learn how to wrestle, to learn how to, you know, do some jiu-jitsu, to get Conor to a point where he's not getting tapped out all damn time.
He's
down.
Stubborn.
He's stubborn. Your he's going to ride with his camp. And UFC camps, he says it all the time. Hey, why don't you bring in other people? No, I stay with my camp. I do this, things my way. It's just us. And it wins him a lot of fights. But not all his fights. The second Nate Diaz fight, he had to go out and get help. People that look like Nate. People that had the same skill set. He hasn't done that enough this time with Floyd. And I think his game plan is going to be the same it is in MMA. Which is, I'm going to be aggressive. I'm going to go up to him. I'm going to try to impose my will. And that's not going to work either. Sometimes you have to adjust to the other person. Conor hates that. He visualizes what he's going to do, and he wants to control everything, control his destiny. Sometimes you have to be smart. You have to adjust. That's Mayweather's best attribute, right? It's his ability to adjust to his opponent. Conor doesn't do that.
And I think the most important thing that you said there is, you know, Conor visualizes things. Floyd visualizes nothing. And the best fighter in the world is the best fighter in the world because he doesn't come in there with a game plan. Because what happens when the shit don't work? Like, you know, Conor visualized knocking Jose Aldo out. Now, what if he missed that punch, right? Then what happens? What is your strategy after that? And this is not saying, like, you have a plan A, B, C, D. That's fine. Like, having plans, it's fine to come in with a plan. But to be so reliant on one where your opponent relies on intuition and finding out what you want to do and what you're going to try to do and taking those weapons away from you. Like, if you've watched any Floyd Mayweather fight, it's like a computer. You're like figuring out your tendencies, what you'd like to do. You know, I think when I interviewed Zab Judah a long time ago, Zab mentioned that when you fight Floyd, it's like fighting a video game that's learning your tendencies, right? There's like, it's starting to figure you out, like Psycho Mantis in the first Metal Gear Solid, if anybody remembers that. Like, you had to unplug the controller and plug it into the different port to beat him because he knew what you were going to do next. Like, that was probably one of the greatest boss battles ever in a video game. And Floyd is like that boss. Once he has you figured out, what are you going to do? And Conor's got a very limited skill set, so it's like he probably only has a few traps to set. And I think Paulie's very well versed when he talks about traps. If you listen to MMA Hour, he talks about these things in great detail. Like, if you're going to set a trap, what happens when that trap doesn't work? Floyd gives you different looks. He never really fights the same. He moves differently. He fights to win rounds. He doesn't fight to win the fight. It's very weird. Like, he comes in there and he tries to figure out what you're doing and make sure he does enough to get that round and then get out of there. Yeah. So against Conor, who's going to come out there and swing and look to knock his little pea head off and all these other things that he's talking about, as the fight gets longer, you realize that nothing is working and frustration sets in. And Floyd's no light puncher. everybody that ever interviewed has always said that Floyd, he's not like Golovkin, but it stings you. And if you take enough of them, you start to, you know, your body starts to break down. He does good work to the body, and his jab to the body takes the wind out your sails. What happens when Conor gets in the eighth and ninth rounds, which is essentially 27 minutes, which is longer than a five-round UFC fight? What happens when his hands start to lower, when he starts breathing hard, and Mayweather's just sitting there looking at you like, I could still go another 10 to 12? Conor doesn't like when shit doesn't go his way. So when you're visualizing things and they don't go your way, what are you going to do? You're going to get fucked up.
I think he stays on the stool and quits before he gets fucked up. He's not getting knocked out. Now, do I think he's selling the fight when he's like, yeah, you're going to leave on your back or on your face? Blah. I do. I don't think Floyd's going to go and look for the knockout. I think Floyd appreciates the payday, and in his heart of hearts, he likes what McGregor has brought to this. So he's going to, I believe, kind of take it easy on him late in the fight. He'll dance around him. Maybe some, you know, not rope and dope type shit, but, you know, some little flashy shit. Shuffle his feet, blah, blah, blah. I'm so, you know, take this jab. I'm still so fresh. But I don't think he tries to finish him. I think he just wants to get the hell out of there with his money, have his hand raised next to Conor, give him a hug like he gave Manny a hug, and said, good looks, I'm out. Because honestly, Floyd could have washed Manny Pacquiao. He could have got him out of there. But he didn't. Manny, that fight looked horrible. Let alone not being able to touch Floyd. Floyd was able to hit him whenever he wanted. And Floyd let him stick around.
Yeah, but I think the difference is it's not necessarily up to Floyd. This is gonna sound weird to people, but it's not up to Floyd whether Conor gets knocked out. It's up to Conor if Conor gets knocked out. Because the difference in the Pacquiao fight is Pacquiao's still dangerous, right? Mm-hmm. When Floyd realizes you're not dangerous anymore, that's when he opens up. And Pacquiao is still dangerous regardless of what round you're in. And you look at a lot of the fights that Floyd Mayweather has kind of cruised to a victory. But the fight that I always go back to is the Ricky Hatton fight, because Ricky made a very crucial mistake and ate a check hook, and then Floyd knew that there was nothing left and destroyed him. If Conor makes a crucial mistake, or if Conor gets hit to the body and doubles over, Floyd's going to finish him. But it's up to Conor to make sure he doesn't show how worn he is. Like, a seasoned boxer is going to figure this out. You know, Canelo kept coming at him 12 rounds. Regardless of what you thought about the Canelo fight, Canelo didn't stop fighting. Maidana didn't stop fighting. Cotto didn't stop fighting. If Conor lets Mayweather get to him and stops fighting at any point, Floyd's going to finish him. But it's up to Conor. Like, Floyd's not coming here looking for a knockout. If Conor makes a brutal mistake, overcommits on a punch, and Floyd zaps him with a straight right hand, and Conor's, you know, starts seeing stars, but Floyd's not going to take his foot off the gas. He's going to go for the knockout. But again, it's what Floyd does best is he uses your aggression against you. Like, you come in here like a bat out of hell trying to finish somebody, he's going to take advantage of that. But, you know, like, I remember the Juan Manuel Marquez fight. I talked to Nacho Beristain at a round table before and asked Nacho, what happens when the greatest Mexican counterpuncher fights arguably the greatest defensive fighter of all time? What do you tell your fighter when both of you can't just stand there and look at him, right? Like, you have to fight.
So somebody has to make a move.
And Nacho was like, that is probably the best question that I heard today, because that's the hard part. Like, you can't expect Floyd to ever come at you. He waits for you. And he'll wait 3 minutes, 6 minutes. You can boo all you want. Floyd will land one punch and win the round, and that'll be it. Conor doesn't have that kind of patience. Conor's not going to be patient enough to sit there and wait for Floyd to do something. He might talk, and Floyd's just going to look at him. This isn't a game, man. Like, this isn't whatever Conor thinks this is, it's not.
No, because once you get inside the ring, you revert back to what you know. And Floyd will do the same. They could be, you know, I think he doesn't get him out of there, because I think Floyd has that respect. He's not coming for that. But like you said, if Conor doubles over, that muscle memory kicks in, and he could mollywop him. Yeah. Just because you only know one way as a fighter.
Yeah, and I fully expect that to happen. Like, me, I'd bet on Floyd by knockout late. I don't necessarily think it's going to happen. I think Conor is going to try to pace himself through this fight. It's not going to work, but he's going to try to pace himself and keep it respectable. Like, he doesn't want to get annihilated. But if I was a betting man, because the odds are in favor for you to bet Floyd by knockout, I would take a cold, hard look at rounds 8 and 9 for Floyd to finish him off. Because that's the round where there's two things that happen in the 8th and 9th round. One is if you're down six rounds, you know you need a knockout. Two, you've been in the fight long enough that your body is starting to change. Your body is not doing the same thing that your mind wants it to because you're gassed.
Yeah.
So if these two things are happening in Conor's corner, whoever the hell is going to be in this corner says, Conor, you're down 6-0. And it's like round 8 and 9. This is the biggest mistake-prone rounds. This is where Floyd is at his best. Like, you look at all of his fights. You watch rounds 8 and 9. You watch what he does, the work that he does. This is where I bet for a knockout. But we'll see. We'll talk more about it as we get closer to the fight because we still, what, got a whole 2 weeks and we got a couple media days coming up too.
Yeah, so we have those media workouts tomorrow and Friday. This is being recorded on Wednesday, if you guys don't know. So we're going to have that for our next show as well. So we'll bring you all the craziness that happens on those media workouts. But what you just touched on is something you led me right into the next thing. We saw that same scenario where, you know what, you may have a little confidence or energy in 5 and 6, 7, 8 and 9, you just hit the wall. And we saw that from Klitschko in the Anthony Joshua fight. And he had taken control of that fight. But his body broke down in the 8th and 9th, and he ended up, you know, getting knocked out, TKO, just because he couldn't control it. He ran out of gas, and then now he's retired. I'm a little pissed off because I wanted to see that here at T-Mobile in October. I thought it was a perfect rematch for Joshua to get a win, to come out to Vegas, to really stamp his name on American, you know, soil and say, I'm the best heavyweight in the world. So it sucks that this fell by the wayside and Klitschko hung him up.
Yeah, I mean, it's unfortunate. I mean, you know, I was looking forward to it as well. I'd love to see Anthony Joshua and Klitschko in Vegas. However, I completely understand the Klitschko's decision here. You're 42 years old. You've lost back-to-back fights. And your mind says that you could beat Anthony Joshua. And this is kind of the same thing with Timothy Bradley, who recently retired. Now we have Juan Manuel Marquez, who's announced his retirement, even though he hasn't fought in like 2.5 years. But there comes a point where you just realize, I don't really need this anymore. Like, what is Klitschko really fighting for? Because let's just say you beat Joshua. Then you got to fight the fucker again. That's okay. You know, that's when you think, like, I don't really want it that bad. I'm financially well off. You see these NFL CTE reports or whatever, you know, the Ian McCall interview the other day on the MMA Hour, he's talking about his mental issues, and you start thinking, like, what am I going to do this for?
Yeah.
So
that Benoit comparison is, whew. Whenever you start thinking about going Benoit, that's definitely time to get help.
The stuff is deep. So in Klitschko's case, I understand, like, why do this again? I mean, shit, you didn't win the last fight. And if that uppercut didn't make you retire from boxing, you know what I'm saying? Like, you could get hit with way worse. Like, that's one of the most brutal uppercuts, again, since I think Tyson and Buster Douglas. But that's life-changing stuff. And Klitschko doesn't need this anymore. I mean, how much more money can you make? And why do you want to put your health on the line?
Yeah, so just go lay up next to Hayden and chill.
Yeah, I respect it. You know, I'm happy for him. And, dude, honestly, it's good for the heavyweight division. I don't want to see any more Klitschko's in the heavyweight division. I'm good. They took the heavyweight division overseas with them. Boxing as a whole suffered, and not because of the Klitschko's, but there was no competition for those two guys. Vitaly and Vladimir, you know, they dominated for over a decade. So it's good to have some fresh blood here between Joshua, Wilder. I don't know if Tyson Fury will ever get his shit back together. You got Luis Ortiz. So maybe the heavyweight division, you know, I think Joshua looks like a guy who wants to fight in the States. So between him and Wilder and some of these other guys, Joseph Parker, it's like maybe we can get some rejuvenation in this division.
We just want it to be competitive, right? That's it. Talking about a fighter that I'm sure you're not happy with, Adrian Broner came out and did nothing at all against Garcia and then said that he was chasing him around all day. I believe he said Coyote versus Roadrunner.
Yes, he called it the Roadrunner. And, dude, come on, man. I said this was going to happen, didn't I? Like, I was very explicit in how I said this fight was going to go. I said Adrian Broner fights one way. He doesn't punch in between, you know, when other people are throwing. He has two versions. He either goes on offense or he goes on defense. Mikey Garcia is a smart boxer. And what did Adrian Broner do? Threw one or two punches around, allowed a smaller man to walk him down. He just looked bad. Yo, he's never improved. So this fight went exactly how I thought it was going to go. And, you know, kudos to Mikey Garcia for putting on an excellent performance. But look, man, Adrian, you can make all the excuses, but you should go fishing for them dollar bills that you burnt up and threw in the toilet bowl because you're going to need them eventually. Your boxing career is nearing its end.
Oh, I don't know about that. He does well enough to not get knocked out by elite fighters and still beat the mediocre ones. You can have a long career if you do that and you talk. Like I said, he's still a very good B-side. I believe right after that fight, you tweeted, you know what? I still want to see him versus Pacquiao.
I do. I do want to see him versus
Pacquiao. You put that on ESPN, doing numbers. So the guy still has appeal.
Well, but that's the thing. Like, I want to see Pacquiao fight him, but there's nobody else I want to see Adrian Broner fight. Like, if you look at Adrian Broner as a guy who wanted to be the next Floyd Mayweather or the big box office attraction, this losing shit's going to eventually get to him. And if it hasn't already, you just lost to a smaller fighter, Mikey Garcia, who came up in weight and pretty much dominated you for 12 rounds. You got bullied by Sean Porter. Like, you can only fight mediocre guys for so long, and fans are only going to buy into your shit for so long, because the ultimate thing here, like, to be Floyd Mayweather, you have to win. And Broner doesn't win. So if it ain't Pacquiao, who would you want to see Adrian Broner fight? Like, what fight interests you, unless it's a guy coming up? Like, dude, Broner, unless it's like...
Give me Pacquiao, give me Crawford, give me... Danny Garcia needs a bounce back fight.
But why do you want... here's my point. Why do you want to see him in any of those fights? You don't think he's going to win any of those fights, right?
No.
Exactly. That's what the point I'm making. Like, Broner's career as a credible threat, he's a gatekeeper now. He's a full-blown gatekeeper. And I don't even know what gates he keeps, but that's what he is. Because the talent, like, he's just not good, dude. He's just not good enough. It's his fault. Oh, well.
It is. And it's our time to move on to UFC. Once again, it's a return episode. We got 3 weeks of stuff. No commercials. No nothing. We're going straight through. So, UFC 214. We were separate. This is probably the first fight we weren't around each other to watch in like a year. Because at least there was like champions. We had the chat. We covered stuff together. We've been at the fights. It's been a second. So, you had the perspective of not being in the arena. I was in the arena. You know, I always get caught up by the hype around the situation. When I'm there, I feel it different ways. Is John Jones now, without question, the best ever?
Without question, no, not without question. There's going to be a question. The only reason why that there is a question is because he's still relatively young. I liken John Jones to Roy Jones in the sense that when Roy Jones was at his best, people were saying that he was the best thing they've ever seen in a boxing ring. John Jones' career is not over yet. And that's the only thing that's keeping him away, because arguably he's the greatest fighter we've ever seen. I can't say without question. But but right now, if you ask me who's the greatest fighter I've ever seen, it's John Jones. Fedor was the greatest heavyweight we ever seen. Anderson Silva's run was one of the greatest that we've ever seen. But John Jones, he hasn't completed yet. He could end like Fedor. He could end like Anderson Silva. That'll change a lot of people's perspective. But the man, he's a freak. He's a freak. He's always been one of the greatest. No matter what you think about the man, the fighter is unreal. The problem is that, you know, we have to see what happens if he goes up to heavyweight. What happens there? He never, you know, the rematch with Alexander Gustafsson, it's still lingering. There's always going to be a few questions, but, I mean, the performance was excellent. Even though Cormier even gave him some problems in the fight, he still knocked him out.
Yeah, well, he called that shot 3 years ago, right?
Yeah. He knew, that's what I talk about. When you watch guys who study the fight game and fight off of intuition as well, John Jones is one of those guys. Like, to notice something that Cormier has done for years and take advantage of it. And much credit has to go to Mike Winklejohn and Greg Jackson as well, master game planners. But to call that shot that Cormier dips his head and clock him with that left kick, yo, it was a thing of beauty. And Cormier fought a great fight up until that point, but he just can't. He's Charles Barkley. He's Patrick Ewing. He's everybody that lived in the shadow of Jordan. That's who Daniel Cormier is.
Well, at least he got his title. He's Hakeem Olajuwon. Because you know what? Jordan may have retired for 2 years, but I got mine. So you guys going to say whatever the hell you want. Sure. Like, you can't take this title away. That's who he is. He's Olajuwon. Where he's just like, you know what? All right, cool. Like you say, put an asterisk if you want next week. Oh, if Jordan was here, he would have won 8 straight. He wasn't. So I got this title.
Yeah. Yeah, so more power to John. I don't know what happens next. All this rumor about him fighting Brock Lesnar is still kind of silly.
Told you what happens next. Lesnar versus John Jones. John Jones talking about showing up at SummerSlam, which I'm watching at your crib. Self-invite.
I just, look, man, I mean, do I think the Brock Lesnar match fight will eventually happen? Yeah. I don't. I think that they're kind of planted the seeds for it. Just some of the particulars are what makes me curious about it. The December thing, and then the fact that the WWE is now teasing this whole if Lesnar loses at SummerSlam. I don't think Lesnar's going to lose at SummerSlam because they mentioned this. Unless they're just really being like oblivious and thinking like kids are not, like nobody's watching this in the UFC at the same time, so we can plant this to get Brock away from wrestling. But I think once the WWE buys into something that's out there, they usually go against it. So I don't think Brock is going to lose at SummerSlam. I kind of hope he does, but I don't think he is.
Oh, he's going to drop the belt to Roman Reigns because it's Roman Reigns.
I don't know. I don't know if they're ready. We'll talk about that when we get to the WWE part of this because there's a lot about WWE you got to talk about, plus G1. But, yeah, man, John Jones, best fighter in the world right now. I don't know who the hell is going to beat him. I have no clue.
We'll see if Brock is that guy. Eventually, let's go down rest of the card. Tyron Woodley versus Damian Maia. Tyron Woodley, you blink and he's the most boring fighter in the UFC, according to Dana White.
It's bullshit.
He got passed up on the GSP fight now. GSP Bisping, which I always said was going to happen. He never had plans to fight Woodley. That power is real. He almost got knocked out by Big Rig. Big Rig does not hit like Woodley. So
yeah,
he was not taking that. Bisping's the easiest champion to unthrow. It's like true. Cake. Everyone wanted that, and GSP used his leverage to hit the jackpot. So there's no reason not to fight Bisping. Woodley's a tougher fighter than Bisping. Why would you do that? So GSP knew what he was doing. He got the fight. Woodley made it easy on him. But honestly, how else do you beat Damian Maia? I wish Dana White. I wanted to stay and ask Dana White that, but Dana White was in and out on that press conference, and I was writing my article. But I wanted to ask him, since you think it was boring, how else do you beat Damian Maia? Please enlighten us.
Yeah, dude, I got a lot of problems with how Dana handled this. I mean, for one, Tyron Woodley has fought Robbie Lawler, Wonder Boy twice, Damian Maia, all top guys. Like, unquestionably the top guys in the welterweight division. He knocked out Robbie Lawler. He had a pretty exciting fight the first time with Wonderboy, and then he strategically outpointed him after the draw in the rematch, which was boring. So are Floyd Mayweather fights. And here's my point. He fought Damian Maia, who is, without a doubt, the most dangerous submission artist we have ever seen in MMA in terms of the jiu-jitsu practitioner. I called the shot because I said, Tyron Woodley is an exceptional wrestler. Damian Maia can't wrestle. He has that, you know, he can drag you down, but he's not a shoot guy, and he doesn't really. The only mistake that Woodley can make is keeping his back against the cage, which he did at some points, but then after that, he just shrugged off all of his attempts. What was Woodley supposed to do at this point? I know people say you want him to fight and to knock him out, but come on, dude. He stuffs, 24 takedown attempts? Now, look, if you don't like it, right? If you're Dana White and you say, I don't like what Woodley did, you must not like what GSP did against Nick Diaz.
What he does against everyone.
Like, can we just be honest here? GSP doesn't have exciting fights unless somebody else makes them exciting. Carlos Condit kicked him upside the head, made it exciting. Him and Jake Shields had like a jab fest. GSP doesn't have exciting fights. Just call a spade that I just like GSP better and I want him to have a title shot against Bisping, somebody he can beat. Because Woodley will probably fuck GSP up. Yeah. So
don't ruin the meal ticket. We need stars. We need GSP with a belt.
But my biggest issue was how it was handled. Don't have your welterweight champion go out there and promise him a title shot, you know, a title defense, not even a title shot, a title defense against one of the most popular MMA fighters in history and have him speak on it after his fight only to not communicate with him and take it away from him at a press conference.
Publicly.
You could have been more of a man than that and told Tyron Woodley backstage after his fight, this is what's going to happen. Dana White operates on emotion and passion, so I get why this happened. But it's embarrassing to run down your welterweight champion.
Crazy. Like,
and you just don't do that. You don't do that to that man because, again, he Woodley's not turning down fights. Woodley was smart. Remember, you remember when he sat on the bench for all those years? And I was even critical of him sitting on the sidelines waiting for his title shot.
Yeah.
But he did what he needed to do, and he gets the job done. Much like Floyd Mayweather. He does what he has to do, gets the job done, and then he gets on the mic and says, "I'm the best in the world." There's a method to Woodley's madness.
We'll see if it sells. Because that's the only thing missing. That's why he wanted a GSP fight. He wanted big money. Dana literally just hurt his chances of having big money.
So, and that's the problem with, you know, Mayweather has his own promoter versus Tyron Woodley is Dana White's your promoter. And when your own promoter is running you down and telling you that you're boring and you're not exciting and who wants to pay to see him fight again, well, of course he's not going to get a big money fight because you're his promoter.
Yeah.
Like, Woodley has to be his own best promoter. I was disgusted by the whole thing. And, you know, some people are like, is there some racial undertones there? Could be, because I don't think Dana ever really enjoyed the fact that Woodley said that he wasn't marketed because he was black. And I don't think Dana's like an out-and-out racist. A lot of people say stupid shit like Dana's like an out-and-out racist. It's not that. But there are underlying things that when you notice and you pay attention, yeah, Woodley, Mighty Mouse, why aren't these guys getting pushed? Why aren't they getting pushed to the urban market? There is some things that they're missing the bus on here. But then you go out there and you just run them down at a press conference. And it's like, come on, man. What do you expect to happen?
Yeah, it's not the way to go. So with that being said, we had a wash in the next fight. Cyborg finally has a title. She actually has some opponents, it looks like. She has some options. Where the hell did a 145-pound division come from? Now we're holding polls. There's four different women she can fight. Holly Holm seems to be interested in a fight, which this should have been that one. In all honesty, Holly should have fought her now, but whatever. They gave Holly a cupcake fight so she wouldn't have a ton of losses in a row. And then now we're building up the excitement again. At least people can watch. People can say, okay, she didn't get to, you know, fight Ronda Rousey, but she can fight the person who kicked Ronda Rousey his head off. And Cyborg can kind of build that mystique and build the division. This was a huge fight for women. I think it kind of went under the radar with a lot of the Jon Jones stuff and everything else. But, man, I can't wait to see Cyborg fight again.
Yeah, me too. I don't necessarily know if Holly's going to take that fight. I feel like, let's hold her feet to the fire over some shit that she got popped and got cleared of. And then, yeah, she failed the drug test before. But you know who else failed multiple drug tests? Vitor Belfort, Alistair Overeem. Like, and the list goes on and on. Like, fighters
failed Lesnar, drug tests. Like, he's about to get major cash out.
Jon Jones. I mean, come on, guys. Like, people who if you don't want to fight Cyborg because you think she's going to end your career, just say that. Stop using these excuses that she failed a drug test 10 years ago or 8 years ago, however long ago it was. You have Asada, and if they find something on her, she'll get flagged. If you're that tough, you just tough your way through it. I mean, Mark Hunt fought a juiced-up Brock Lesnar, right? And that wasn't fair to Mark Hunt. But in Cyborg's case, like, Cyborg hasn't been popped for anything. Like, she got flagged, but they cleared her of that shit. And everything else, she's just been beating up people. So just take your L. That's all it is. Take your L. And if not going to be Holly Holm, I'm pretty sure Kat Zagano's going to take that fight.
That's not bad. Kat can – listen, Tonya looked good, even in the loss. She came out tough. She lasted longer than most against Cyborg. She didn't come off looking bad at all. Late replacement, left respectably. No. It was cool. We got Robbie Lawler versus Cowboy. It was a good fight, right?
It was a good fight.
I thought it was good. Destruction, but it was good.
I thought that fight was going to be. It's hard to say because it's unfair because I had unfair expectations. Like, I was like, oh, it's going to be the fight of the year, and then I thought about it. I was like, no, it's not, because we're expecting it to be fight of the year.
So I wanted it to be five rounds though. Five rounds would have really put it over the top.
Yeah, and I was still kind of salty because we didn't get it in Vegas, but maybe if they do Robbie Lawler, Tyron Woodley, I think it'd be. I don't want to say it's stupid, but I don't feel like it's necessary to put Robbie back in that fight right now.
Well, Woodley's injured now, so.
Well, yeah, he's going to be benched, and I feel like Robbie will probably fight, like, Rafael Dos Anjos or somebody like that.
Robbie should fight Wonder Boy.
Well, he should, and I kind of think
that Wonder should Boy be the number one contender. Even though Woodley has no, you know, he doesn't want to fight Wonder Boy for a third time because the last one was so boring and they kind of knew each other. But Wonder Boy is still up there. He's beat damn near everyone else in the division you can beat. Why not?
Yeah.
Number one contenders match. Like, let's run it. We had Ozdemir beating the brakes off of Jimmy Manoa.
Called it. There were a bunch of people that sat there and were like, yo, Jimmy, like, Ozdemir, he's in over his head against Manoa. I was like, look, light heavyweight division is very thin. If you have technique and you can hit hard, you'll be good. So Manoa went in there like a fool and got clobbered. I'm not surprised by this. Like, people, like, you, some people you can just look at and be like, yeah, he's going to fuck somebody up. Like, I said the same thing about this weekend's fight, Nico Price against Alan Jermaine. I didn't understand why Nico Price was underdog. I was like, have you watched this guy fight? He fucks people up. Same thing with, like, Mike Perry when he beat up Jake Ellenberger. People are like, Ellenberger. I was just like, no, you watch Mike Perry, he fucks people up. And you can't really plan for guys who come in there and just knock people out. It takes a lot of tape so you can start seeing tendencies. But new guys, when they come in, and it's something that's indicative all the way through in the UFC, if you always watch, new knockout artists have great success for, like, the first five fights. Then people start figuring them out and finding out what they don't like to do.
Well, because there's not enough film if you just knock people the hell out for a while.
Exactly. Manoa came in there against a guy who people didn't know a whole lot about, but he was knocking people out. And Manoa thought he could walk in there, knock people out, probably thinking about fighting David Haye or somebody else, and got fucked up. So that's what he gets. So
you think he would have learned from that Rumble fight?
You know, no, probably not. But maybe Manoa gets his fight with Daniel Cormier now if Cormier chooses to stick around the light heavyweight. Maybe.
Possibly. Cormier might retire. I don't even know. What else? Why go back down?
Cormier is, again, it's like, not only did you lose, but you got knocked out. And to have one person in the, like, no matter where you go, John's going to be right there.
Yeah.
If you go to heaven, if he's like, look, Kane, you're never going to fight again because you've been injured. Like, it's your fault I'm down here in the first fucking place, and now you don't fight. So, like, if you go up to heavyweight, John's like, hey, guys, I'm going up to heavyweight too. And it's like, fuck. Like, what do I do now? One other thing I want to say about John Jones before we move on. Do you find his statements about Cormier being a great man disingenuous, or do you think that he really means the shit that he says?
I will never again in my life believe John Jones. Okay. Ever again in my life. Listen, he came off sincere. That was one of the best acting jobs I've seen in a long time in combat sports. If I was a novice, if I was a casual to the sport, I would have been heartfelt. It would have touched me. Like, yo, this guy actually has changed. Look at him. He's learned from his mistakes. He's a family man. He has his little girls running around the octagon during fight week. He comes out. He thanks Cormier for being a role model and a father, and he looks up to him. I know the guy that when the camera turns off, he says, hey, you there, pussy? I'm not forgetting that guy. I remember the real John Jones. I remember him walking through, fuck if I know, New Mexico with Ariel arm in arm saying, I'm so sorry, and then goes and pops for dick pills. Probably because he had cocaine dick the week of the fight. Like, no, I know John Jones. I don't believe it at all. Now, you can be better at hiding shit. You can take some acting classes. You got a lot of time to kill the year that you're out. Like, it's not hard to get an acting coach and make regular ass people believe you. I don't believe a word of it.
Okay, I'm in total agreement here. I think he's very disingenuous, and, you know, to quote the great Jay-Z, he's not John, he's OJ. Okay, because this dude is OJ Simpson. I don't buy it. Like, he just said in some interview where he's talking about black fighters need to stick together. Get the fuck out of here. I'm not buying any of this. So, yeah, I don't buy it.
I ain't buying that shit at all. All right, so now that we got John Jones out of here and the farce that he is, it's time to talk about wrestling. Let's start off with the G1, right? Because I feel like you missed a shit ton of G1. I missed a lot. I've caught up. There's no G1 the next 2 days. So I'm going to rewatch some stuff that I feel I had on in the background. But we're about to, we're headed into the semis. Shit's getting real. Like, there's two more matches and then the finals, right? So I qualify this as the semis. And we know who the hell is going to win in the B. Well, only two people can win in the B bracket. The A is still kind of wide open. How they've built this.
Don't talk too much because I'm on like day 12 right now. Oh, so shit. Don't spoil anything after day 12.
All right. Hold on. So we won't completely, but next week we'll go over it more in detail. How about this? We'll do hypotheticals. No match stuff. If you guys haven't watched it, go back and watch it. Some good matches. What's your favorite match so far that you watched?
Ooh, that's tough. Night one, Naito and Ibushi was amazing. Look, Ishii's been fucking amazing in this tournament. Even when he's losing, Ishii's been amazing. I don't know, man. I don't know what my favorite match. I don't know. Evil and Sonata was great. Jesus. I don't know. I honestly don't know. Wow. You know what? Right now, if you put a gun to my head and made me answer this, I'd say the Michael Elgin Kazuchika Okada match might be my favorite, because that ending stretch, I swore Elgin was going to beat him. I swore it. Might be my favorite match.
Now, Big Mike did have a good show in that match.
It's tough.
It is tough. I'm going to go and... Man, it's tough, but I think Ibushi's the MVP of this tournament so far in my mind. I'll go with day 11, Ibushi Tanahashi is my favorite match.
That was really good. And you know what was really good about it is the fact that my favorite part about this is very subtly when Tanahashi wrestles where somebody else that he knows he's a favorite, because that was Ibushi's backyard, Tanahashi becomes a dick.
He was a heel, right? Great. Like heel, yeah. Tanahashi is like heel John Cena. Like, it's when you get a little bit of that old school, like, hip-hop John Cena still. I love that shit.
Yeah.
And he doesn't get to do that. I mean, what? It was the second go-around for him versus Okada, where he was kind of the heel. And Okada was still the up-and-comer. And people were kind of rooting for Okada to win, and they broke his heart at Wrestle Kingdom. Yep. I love that. That stretch is probably my favorite stretch. Even though their third go-around and the match was incredible and 5 stars, blah, blah, blah. I like the second storytelling better. When Tanahashi was like, I know I'm good. I'm like Super Cena. He's not going to beat me. He's not going to crush me. I don't care what you fans want. And he's the young, pretty boy you're rooting for. I'm going to just break his dreams. And that's the Tanahashi I got. And that was great. He's not going to carry that narrative into anything, but it's nice to get a glimpse.
Yeah. I mean, it's there's this gray area in New Japan where they allow the faces to become heels in certain places. Like when you watch Okada wrestle... Naito, for instance, and Naito's just over with a lot of people, and Okada does dick shit. He was a dick against Nagata, might have been. Like Okada, like there's a lot of gray area. It's just been great storytelling. I mean, even though like the only true heel faction in New Japan, like I know Los Incobernables, their opponent is heels with Naito in them, but it's really Suzuki-Gun. Like Minoru Suzuki is a dick, and they always interfere with El Desperado interfering in every match. And Zack Sabre Jr. is part of that. They're the only true heel faction, but everything else is shades of gray. And I enjoy that aspect of it because it gives a different dynamic in every match. But this tournament,
I would qualify Naito as a true heel, even though I'm super hype on Naito, so I can understand why crowds pop for him. But still, like he does heel shit.
Yeah, I mean he's a.
Their crew is dope. Bullet Club is no longer heels. They're a face faction. Well, no.
Yeah, they're super over. But, I mean, Los Incognables is like, you look at that crew, LIJ is, of course, you have Naito, but you have Evil. But then you have Sonata, who I've been high on Sonata for like at least 2 years when he made his debut when he came over from Noah. And Sonata looks like a superstar. The dude is like 6'4", muscular. He got a unique look. And then he does like high. He has like a great moonsault and a dragon sleeper, but they're over like with Bushi. Like those guys are kind of over with the fans, and they're like the Naito reminds me of like Stone Cold in the sense that he's really an in betweener. Like if you made Naito fight a bunch of heels, he'd be a babyface. But he got the same personality.
Yeah,
doesn't care about the IC title. Doesn't care about anything. He just comes here to win, and he sees like all the corruption, like the eye shit. But as a whole, I mean, yeah, this tournament has always been good. It's the best thing in professional wrestling. And if you're not watching and you're sitting around watching WWE, shame on you. Because I've been saying this shit since this podcast has started. Anybody who asks me, I say the same thing. New Japan is head and shoulders above WWE. And there's in-ring storytelling is phenomenal.
And it's $10. Let's go. $10. Just don't get fast food one day. It's $10.
Yeah, dude, it's not that hard.
No. And then let's talk about WWE before I got to get back to work here at the station. Man, let's see. Where to start? We're prepping for SummerSlam. I broke it down into SmackDown and Raw. So let's start with SmackDown and we'll do a quick like run through of it. Next week we'll get more in depth. Cena returns, kind of. I mean, we all thought Cena was going to get the push, right? Mr. America versus Jinder Mahal. And Shit went left. Knock pulled the upset. And now we get Knock versus Jinder, and I don't know what to think.
I feel like SmackDown as a whole is painting themselves into a corner, right? It's like they had the triple threat when Jericho came back for one night, because I feel like they botched that finish at Battleground with AJ and Owens. And they went in there and they flipped the title back to AJ. But it's like, that was your high point. That was like your pay-per-view match. But no, we're going to end up doing this again at SummerSlam with Shane McMahon as the ref, right? You had a Nakamura-John Cena match on SmackDown. Why?
I mean, right? That shit was a good match, right?
It was a good match, but that's a moneymaker. Like, that's like when Stone Cold walked on Brock Lesnar for King of the Ring. A little bit different because it was unannounced. But it's like, why are you doing it like with 3 weeks before the pay-per-view? And then what makes it worse is Nakamura doesn't even do shit on SmackDown this week. So there's like no heat between Nakamura and Jinder Mahal. So I didn't really get it. I don't know what they're doing. Like, I feel like the writers aren't pacing anything properly.
Well, no, now they're sped up. They're on a treadmill now. Because I mean, they have 2 weeks to build a feud to main event for your main title. That's unless what I'm saying. They spent the past 2 months building, you know, Knock versus Corbin for Corbin to cash in. Then you spent your time wisely.
See, and I don't feel like they're working towards a Corbin cash in now. I feel like the way that they've been booking this,
if Corbin loses to Cena, I can see him losing and then cashing in later in the night.
But do you think he cashes in on Nakamura?
Yeah, I think Knock wins and then he cashes in on Nakamura and you continue the feud with Corbin as champion.
See, I think that buries Nakamura, in my humble opinion. Like, no, I think
you can have Knock win the title outright, start celebrating, Corbin sneak in from the crowd, hit end of days, give the briefcase, another end of days, take the title and run off, and Knock doesn't look weak. He got sneak attacked. And Knock goes and he wins it next month or the month after.
I guess my problem with this more than anything else is that Corbin sucks. And you, listen, and you can't go from
shit about that. What I know. Say?
But you to go from Jinder Mahal carrying the title, because I feel like Corbin is either might have to cost Nakamura the title more so than like, because everybody kind of feels like Nakamura is going to win the title because he's better than Jinder Mahal. But when you really think about it, there's nothing built towards the SummerSlam feud. For Jinder to just lose, because Jinder's nothing without the title. Let's be very clear about this. Jinder loses the title. He's nobody. Nobody cares anymore. He kind of has to win this match against Nakamura by hook or crook, because it's not the main event. It's not the top build card on SummerSlam. It's all about the Fatal 4-Way. That's the only match that I actually really care about, because nothing else. This might be one of the worst SummerSlam cards I've ever seen.
Damn. Well, that's good. Whenever you enter with these expectations, you leave somewhat happy. Because your expectations are so low.
Maybe. But my point is...
How are you not hyped for Styles Owens?
Because I've seen it. It's been overdone and all the finishes have been shit. Like, I think Owens Styles, if I didn't see this thing like 4 or 5 times already, like, I'd be hype about it. The injection of Shane McMahon makes me feel like we're about to head towards another bullshit finish.
Yeah, I agree with that.
And that in itself hurts the match, because Styles Owens main eventing any card is something that you should be interested in. But once you start putting a bunch of shenanigans in it, it takes away from the actual match and what it could be. So, and then it's like going back to Owens and Jericho, what they could have done if they main evented WrestleMania versus what they ended up doing fighting for the United States title. So they're fighting for a lower card in a super jam-packed card at SummerSlam. They're probably going to wrestle somewhere in the middle of the card, and I don't think they're going to get the time that they need to do the match that we should get, right? Because you got to devote time elsewhere. So I'm not hyped, man. I'm not hyped about
12 matches on this card, so there's definitely no time.
Like, it's too goddamn long, man. And I don't know how you manage to get 12 matches in, but you still have a bunch of dumb matches.
Get the liquor ready. Because I'm going to be sauced. We're there for like 8 hours.
Yeah, I'm saying it's a long day, and I don't know, man. And more, like, I would like the Miz doesn't have a match right now, which we'll talk about Raw in a second. I know that people are critical about throwing guys into a multi-man match, But I feel like this pay-per-view needs like a ladder match of some sort.
Yeah, because I mean, no Charlotte for the women's side, no Miz. To my knowledge, no Sami Zayn.
No.
No Hardy Boys. Shit's just kind of in disarray.
It's bad. So anyway, what were we talking about? We started off talking about what, John Cena? Is that where we started?
No, we're moving briskly through the cards. The Usos versus the New Day. I'm still into the feud.
I like the Usos. I think the Usos have done a great job.
I wouldn't mind them winning it back, winning the titles back. I'm sure that's not the plans, but you know, I like what they're doing. I like, you know, still the Fashion Police shit has been hilarious, even though I don't think they get to wrestle the Ascension at SummerSlam, but that's been funny.
Yeah, I don't know. I'd like to see the Usos go over. I think the Usos are, like, the New Day chasing the titles is a little bit more interesting. But somewhere in this feud, the Usos are going to have to either injure somebody in the New Day or get somebody else. Because I'm starting to get to the point where it's like, dude, it's 3-on-2. You can't fucking win. Like, that, there's a problem here. Or the Usos, like, find somebody to help you. Because it's 3-on-2.
Yeah.
It's just sense. It's the Freebird rule, but, yo, like, kayfabe this. It's 3-on-2. Like, the New Day should never lose. They should always find a way to cheat to win.
All right. Let's see about Raw then. Raw, Fatal 4-Way. Everyone's hyped about the Fatal 4-Way. You don't think Brock is losing a belt. I think he drops it. We all want Samoa Joe, which means it's not going to happen. And that leaves Roman Reigns. And yeah, I know I'm not going out on a limb anymore, right? I always do the, oh, Finn Balor's going to be the Royal Rumble guy, or this is going to happen. I'm done predicting really cool shit for the WWE to just smile and laugh and give us bullshit. But if they wanted to do something cool, they'd have Rollins and Ambrose win the tag team titles, come out later, you know, just fucking crush everyone, crush Lesnar, put Lesnar through the triple power bomb spot, and have Roman Reigns win the title, and all three of them are champions, and we have the Shield heel reunion. But the WWE isn't cool, so fuck that.
Well, there's two reasons why that won't happen. And look, people are going to be like,
because Vince really? Is alive. He has a heartbeat.
No, I don't even think it's necessarily. It's that, but it's not necessarily that. And for one, I completely agree with you on this. This is one of the few things that I will say that I 100%, if they didn't botch how they've handled Ambrose and Rollins, and I know some people like this, but I kind of hate how they've done this, and I've hated how they've done Rollins since he came back. But this would be the way to go. The problem with it is the WWE has so much invested as Roman Reigns as a single star that they can't do it, right? It's like they can't really do a Shield reunion because then it's the Shield and it's not like Roman Reigns and the Shield. It's the Shield. They want Roman Reigns to stand on his own as a singles competitor.
It's not tag working. Team. It's not working.
No, it's not. It's not. But well, it is working because he does draw. He still has the most heat out of anybody
I'm
in the
company.
I'm
not sure if he draws. He has the most heat.
He draws. Those women and children come to see Roman Reigns.
Yeah, his house show numbers are pretty shitty. There's also a reason why John Cena's a free agent and probably going back to Raw after this.
Well, I think the move to go is Roman Reigns versus John Cena at WrestleMania. However, you can only do it if you turn Roman Reigns completely full-blown heel. Because to put Roman Reigns over on John Cena after putting Roman Reigns over on The Undertaker, like, it just, you can't, it doesn't work as a babyface because it's not really going to put him over. People, it's really ramming him down our throats. But, the Fatal 4-Way, look, Strowman crushing Reigns with that office chair was beautiful, right? And, like,
you
Samoa Joe
arm pitched that shit, too.
Yo, that was crazy. Samoa Joe jumping up to choke Roman Reigns, that was excellent. Everything about this has been handled excellent. But, yeah, I ideally think, like, in terms of, like, the most indestructible guys in that Fatal 4-Way, like, Strowman and Lesnar are, like, 1 and 2. The two guys that you just can't beat one-on-one. Then it's, like, Reigns and then Samoa Joe, based on booking. Which means that Roman Reigns should need some help to win, which means that it should make sense for Ambrose and Rollins to come in and make this happen. It's not going to happen, though. And we'll just have to deal with it. No real Shield reunion. But the crowd was hot for it. The crowd is hot for a Shield reunion.
Oh, super hot. Instantly, it'd pull Roman Reigns out of that pit that he's in. And if he's heel, you at least keep the booze going. So
I feel like there's a way to handle this. You can have Rollins and Ambrose be heel, like turn heel to help Roman Reigns. I don't know how you do this, but it's not the seeds haven't been planted properly. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah. What else before we get out of here? Miz not defending the belt. We talked about Neville versus Tozawa. I think it's going to be one of the better matches of the night. That won't disappoint. Sasha kill 205 Live. Sasha steps in for Bayley, who got booed and damn near cried on stage.
It's a way to go. I mean, Alexa Bliss and Sasha have had like a great little social media feud. There's more heat in that feud than there is with Bayley and Alexa. And we already saw Bayley and Alexa.
Yeah, no, we're good on that. Sasha still doesn't have a win on a big stage. Can we give her the title? Can we give her her moment?
Probably not.
Shit, probably not. And then Finn versus Wyatt, the last thing.
Okay, two things. Before we talk about Finn and Wyatt, because I'll leave Finn and Wyatt to the end. One.
This is the end.
Well, this is the end. But Enzo,
I didn't even mention that, sorry.
Yeah, this has been the worst thing I've watched. This has been so sad to watch him and Cass break up, and they're going to do this shark cage match. Like, and you have Big Show. Like, all this is bad, bad, bad. And it makes me feel like Enzo and Cass won't be here much longer. Because neither of them are over.
Yeah, if they don't get back together, they have no hope.
Like, what if, you know, this has been a ruse to beat up the Big Show, and Enzo helps Cass, and they're back together as heels?
Oh, that's perfect then. Perfect. All worth it.
Won't happen. But anyway.
You're too smart for the room. That's why you're too smart for the room. We got to think like Vince.
What are your thoughts on this Bray Wyatt Finn Balor feud?
Oh, man. It's all a hoax to see the demon, right? I thought this was going to be the first way they introduced the demon. Instead, they put him against Rollins and kind of wasted it on a regular Raw. But now we haven't seen it in a year. They kind of wanted people to forget about the demon. And they're playing up against the, you know, supernatural character that they have. I'm okay with it. I think Finn goes over. I think it's a one-off. But I think you put Finn back over a guy who was just a champion not too long ago, upper mid-card guy. And then you say, Finn, we got to fit you back into the top card. And I'm hearing rumblings about another shakeup. I think Finn is a guy who's primed to go to SmackDown and carry a real title. Because on Raw, I don't think you're getting the title away from Strowman, Reigns, maybe Samoa Joe. If you put another strong guy over there like an Owens, he can survive in that picture. Finn can't. There's monsters there. He can do so in SmackDown. So I think we might see that change over. But even with that being said, I think this is a good guy to just give him a boost. This is what why it is, right? He's enhancement talent. They threw him a bone by letting him be champion, but he's enhancement talent.
Yeah, like I agree. I think Finn needs to go to SmackDown. I think there's no room for him on Raw.
No. My problem with Gallows, Anderson, get your ass to SmackDown and let's just Bullet Club it up.
Yeah. So my problem with this feud is I don't give a shit. And Bray, like this whole supernatural thing has been really hokey. Like when Balor appeared with his back turned to Wyatt and all, like it's been really hokey. And this is the 1 year anniversary of Finn debuting as a demon, right? SummerSlam, he did that last SummerSlam.
Yep.
Why are we not even, like, we don't even know why the demon is important, right? Aside from it looks really cool, why is it needed in this particular feud? There's been nothing mentioned about why Finn Balor's alter ego that comes out only in the big shows is needed to beat Bray Wyatt, whose gimmick, it's is, you know, the mystical, magical power shit. So I think they've really dropped the ball on setting us up. Like, it'd be great if they had, like, Bray Wyatt just destroy Finn Balor for, like, 4 weeks. And then we have a reason to see the demon. But when Finn Balor's getting the upper hand on Wyatt without the demon, it just seems stupid. Like, it's just like, all right, cool. Well, we know the demon is coming, but what is the demon? Does the demon wrestle any different? Does the demon do different shit?
That's like, what he needs. He needs to use the Bloody Sunday finish when he's the demon. I don't want to see the coup de grace.
Yeah, it has to be, like, him being the demon needs to be something.
Like malicious, right? Like a dark side. Yeah. Like you got to actually have a dark side, like, rake some eyes, fucking cut people's legs down. Do something.
Yeah, it has to be different. Like, if you just come out as a demon and wrestle the same goddamn match, and more importantly, this really pertains to him facing Bray Wyatt. Any other person, I'd be like, all right, cool. We know the demon comes out of big pay-per-views. But the whole Bray Wyatt thing is about, like, spooky, mystique, superpowers, House of Horrors, dumb shit.
If they did a Jekyll and Hyde, like a real Jekyll and Hyde shit, where, like, Finn has, like, a twitch, and then you just see, like, and he's just slowly turning, like, hulking out, and then the demon comes, and the demon's, like, really, like, fucking possessed status, and he's, like, a heel, and Finn's just like, yo, I can't control it. Like, it's, like, his inner heel. And does, like dastardly shit. That'd be great.
Like, just give me something. That's my point. Give me something. Give me a reason to care about Balor becoming the Dean.
That is how you can get a Bullet Club reunion. Because if you show, like, oh, he has a heel hidden inside, and then he actually goes full heel, you just be like, oh, he'd be like, the Demon won. It took over me. And then you can put him in a heel faction.
Yeah.
And then snap him out of it whenever the fuck you want to turn him face again.
And again, to reiterate what you said, send his ass to SmackDown. Because Balor versus Styles, Balor versus Nakamura, Balor versus Zayn, Balor versus Owens. Yes, we've seen a lot of this shit in NXT. I get it.
I'm ready for Balor, it.
Yeah, Balor versus Cena. Like, dude, I'll take all of those matches over just about everything you can toss at him on Raw. Because Balor in Raw, it's like, for a lot of people, it may not even be believable. You know what I'm saying? Like, he's such a small guy. Yeah. And I get it. Daniel Bryan did it. But I feel like they've even cooled on Balor and Raw because they don't know where to put him because they got four monsters in there right now.
Exactly. And he's better than a mid-card guy. So, man, that's been our show. Welcome back. We did it again. We're going to be recording earlier in the week, Tuesday or Wednesday, so you get this fire early in the week again. We're back on it. It's going to be one hell of a summer. Working towards Mayweather-McGregor. We have Canelo, which I just put in the press credentials for. Canelo versus Triple G coming up, which hasn't gotten any pub. So we got to talk about that shit too. SummerSlam, G1 finals, everything's just bombarding us. So thank you guys for, you know, sticking through our little hiatus. We are back. Until next time, though, we're out.
Peace.